Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cauliflowers. I like to be a busy bee. It's still going. Being just as busy as a bee can be.
Stop.
Buzzing round the garden, sweet as ever seen, taking back the pollen from the dear old queen. Buzz, 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 buzz,
honeybee, honeybee.
Buzz if you like, but don't sting me.
Tom.
Yeah.
I heard that song for the first time when I was trying to find bee-themed songs for our last podcast.
Did you?
Were you familiar with it before?
I've been familiar with that since I was like a child.
Oh my God. It horrified me.
Really?
It's so creepy.
I used to sing that song to my daughter.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It is a bit like kind of, it's like a creepy old-timey bee song.
Well, there's just something creepy about how like gleefully childish.
Gleefully, beefily.
He is. And it's just like, the chorus is just him saying, honeybee, about just yeah. going, buzz, buzz, buzz. Remember, this is the thing that I'm singing about.
Anyway, welcome to the Bitter End podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan.
Where we don't talk about old-timey bee songs. We're actually here to talk about the Candyman franchise for our wrap-up episode.
Yes, we have busted beyond the bitter end and
beyond.
Out the other side. Into the completion, the bliss, that is the bitter end of Candyman as a franchise. So this is the episode 101, where we look back on the whole thing. Zoomed out view, we look at how all of the veins of the franchise have bled out into other culture,
mm-hmm.
and we just sort of go, yeah.
Yeah, we figure out what we've learnt along the way.
What have you learnt, buddy?
Bees.
Yeah, I've not learnt a lot, having already seen the first film.
Mm.
The 2 and 3 kind of bounced off me.
Yeah, they don't leave quite the dent that the first one does, but the the fourth one. But the first one is a very strong horror film of the era, right?
Yeah, like, huge.
It's a solid watch.
In an era specifically where I think a lot of horror films weren't great. That like early 90s
mm-hmm.
period was not like, you know, the 80s boom was over. It had gasped its last gasp.
Remind me again, was it 1990 that it kind of came out?
Maybe, probably.
We should probably know.
We should know by now. I can't remember exactly, but it was 90s.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's kind of like coming on the tail end of the slasher era into a new undefined era of horror, where the slashers are still there, but they're just getting goofier and goofier.
Yeah.
But this kind of goes darker and deeper and more cerebral, I guess, than those horror films were. I guess that this film was a bit of a surprise hit. I just, you know.
Well, I don't even know if it was a huge hit at the time.
It's done all right to get a couple of sequels out, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, true. But, I mean, it's no Nightmare on Elm Street. It's no, Child's Play, you know.
No, which I think, and I think that the fact of maybe not being such a big hit is reflected, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, that this hasn't bled out into other media as much as a Jason or a Freddy. There's no kind of, you know, massive collection of Candyman comics and spin-off novels and stuff, but we'll get to that. But, it is a solid picture, I think.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder why they found it so hard to replicate the success. I mean, don't get me wrong, the new Candyman, the reboot, it's solidified. I know on the last podcast when we talked about it, I came in a little bit lukewarm, and then I warmed to it as we spoke. Since then, listeners, I've watched both Candyman 1 and Candyman 2021 again.
So tell me all about that. How are you feeling on this very close rewatch?
Super good, I gotta say. Me and my wife were talking about how we wanted a lazy day. It was a Sunday. We wanted to watch a film, then go to the pub, then come home and watch another film. My wife remarked it would be nice if the two films could be linked in some way. And then she also said, oh, how was that Candyman film the other day? Because there's a few of them, aren't there? We could watch both Candyman and Candyman. I was like, well, I did just watch them, but let's do
it. Yeah.
And it was good. It was a good watch. She much preferred the new one
to
the original. She was a little lukewarm on the original, which I was like quite worried about. But
how did you feel on the new one second time round? Because you were kind of like, it took you a while to warm to the film. did going into it sort of knowing what to expect let you kind of like take it at face value on its own terms?
Exactly. So just little things like the bad dialogue in the comedy sections. It didn't concern me the way that it did concern me the first time because I knew what was coming.
Yeah, I guess when we watched the first time, I feel like we were both kind of like, man, I hope this is good. And so anything that kind of like diverges from like, you know, like what you're expecting, kind of like, oh no, is it all going to go wrong? Ooh, and you're kind of wobbling to and fro, but like, you know that it's like, well, it's not a happy ending, but it was a happy ending in terms of, in a cinematic sense that like, oh, it was a good film.
Totes, dog. And it's just those middle two films, which I have not rewatched, Day of the Dead and Farewell to the Flesh, that are just like, they're not even like bad exactly. We've watched way worse films. They do not stick in the mind.
No. And I was trying to think about this today about why that is. You know, like they're just not as good. Like, you know, they're not written as well. The score, well, you know, they've recycled a lot of the score. Like, you know, there's a lot of things about it that like technically I don't think are as good. I don't know if it was that, you know, they took it down that whole route that, like, the Candyman is very obsessed with his own bloodline, which, you know, I've made it very clear on this podcast I did not care for that.
It just doesn't make sense.
It feels more interesting. I kind of like the outsider perspective that the first one and the new one have of, like, somebody kind of like being like, what is this all about? What is this urban legend all about? And what is this community all about? Where you've got that extra kind of, in the first one, the fear of like going into Cabrini Green and it all being very alien. And then things actually become supernaturally kind of alien and twisted. And it's about how the community feels about that urban legend, which you don't really get in the two and three. They feel it's just all about this person and like I need to, you know, it's all about their quest.
Yeah.
And I kind of like seeing, you know, like how the Candyman looms large as a
an idea sort of fits into a community that kind serves a purpose for them or you know performs a service sometimes even.
So, you know, they're okay, right? They're not as bad as other... And the franchise never got goofy.
No.
Candyman never became, like, a goofy slasher or something like that. So that, which is good. That's a small mercy.
And I think that's particularly interesting given that Candyman is one of the few, like, quite vocal slasher villains. Like, he's chatty.
He's chatty, and I think... There's also something about the Candyman, and maybe this is like the character comes from a Clive Barker adaptation, and in a similar but also different way to Hellraiser, there's something a bit sexy about Candyman.
Oh, there's something massively sexy about Candyman.
You know, there's an allure to him that is, you know, kind of there is like a sexual potency.
Romance to him
in a different way, but like, you know, like in Hellraiser, like the Cenobites are like kink as fuck, right, and it's all about pain and pleasure and BDSM and stuff like that, whereas there's a kind of that thing of being, I think it's in the car park scene in the first one where she's like terrified and crying but at the sight of the Candyman, but there's something kind of a little bit kind of just a little bit randy guy.
Definitely. Right. And that is something that is missing from the reboot. There's nothing alluring about the contemporary Candyman. It's more just that there's something like inevitable about him. But it's not. But that, he doesn't seduce anyone.
But that kind of works because like the underlying message of that film is so much about like police brutality and things like that, I don't know if that would work.
So that then becomes much more about like the legend attached to the name, and you know, the name can kind of land anywhere and on anyone, and it does on multiple people.
Yeah.
Whereas the earlier one and the Clive Barker story, it's a bit more about like, well, I'm wrong actually, because the Clive Barker story barely has Candyman in it.
Okay.
So perhaps this is a good time to chat a little bit about that. Listeners, I don't know if you've read any Clive Barker, most known probably as the writer and director of the original Hellraiser movie, also a very prominent novelist who's written all kinds of stuff, not just horror, mostly fantasy, to be honest, as well as some children's stuff. And his work is just, he's one of these guys, he's always got an imagination on him, I think is safe to say. He likes building weird worlds with their own rules that he's not shy about over-explaining how things work.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. And everything is sexy and painful is sort of a fairly good way to sum up the works of Mr. Clive Barker. Candyman, the original film, is based on one of the short stories from the Books of Blood, which was the first sort of collection that really got Barker's name known.
Like short story collections, right?
Yeah, it's a bunch of short stories. So this is from the Books of Blood, Volume 5. It was a short story called The Forbidden.
Okay.
The director, Bernard Rose, knew the collection, knew the story, and wanted to adapt this as a film. It's a bit of a different kettle of fish. It's set in England, in an unnamed city that's presumably either Liverpool, where Clive Barker's from, or London, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't actually say. There's no Cabrini Green. No, instead you've got Butts Court.
Ha ha.
Yeah, Butts Court. I don't know. So I'll read a little bit from the intro of The Forbidden, because this, what I like about it is, although there's a lot that's different about the story, you can really see that there's a lot of it that Bernard Rose was very faithful in adapting. And even though this is describing a completely different place, this does evoke for me the opening shots of the first Candyman.
Okay.
So this is how The Forbidden begins. Like a flawless tragedy, the elegance of which structure is lost upon those suffering in it, the perfect geometry of the Spectre Street estate was only visible from the air. Walking in its drear canyons, passing through its grimy corridors from one grey concrete rectangle to the next, there was little to seduce the eye or stimulate the imagination. What few saplings had been planted in the quadrangles had long since been mutilated or uprooted. The grass, though tall, resolutely refused a healthy green.
Oh, totally get that aerial shot from the first film. Yeah,
it's like the drone shot over Chicago.
Yeah.
From there, the story takes us into Butts Court, and which is on the Spectre Street estate, and we meet Helen, who is there not to investigate urban legends. She's there to photograph graffiti. She wants to. She's doing a thesis about urban deprivation and the language of graffiti. She sort of believes that there's secret messages within graffiti that's sort of known only to their communities.
Okay, that's cool.
And it begins with her meeting Anne-Marie, who is the woman with the baby. They sort of get chatting, and Anne-Marie explains that an old man got murdered in the next building over to Butts Court, which was called Ruskin Court. Anne-Marie says, oh, he had a hook, the man what done it, just like Jack the Ripper. Don't know that Jack Ripper actually had a hook, but fine. Mm. So Helen gets a bit curious about this. She goes over to the next court and sort of meets some ladies over there to be like, oh, I heard that someone got murdered here, old man. And they're like, no, nothing like that happened here. What did happen is in the next building over, there was a mentally challenged man got killed in a toilet with a razor, not with a hook, and they cut off his penis and flushed it down the toilet.
Oh.
And this sort of goes on and on a bit. And the overall thing is that wherever she goes to follow these stories, everyone is like, no, that never actually happened, but something worse happened somewhere else. And
okay.
She keeps chasing these stories and forgets all about the graffiti and gets suckered into this idea of stories. She goes to a dinner party with her dick husband, Trevor, who's still a dick.
Oh, Trevor.
And there's still Purcell, who's like the
okay.
And he's just like, well, of course, you know, it's all bollocks, don't you? And he's like, oh, if you can find any evidence of any one of these stories, I'll take you out for like a really fancy dinner on me.
Helen's got to get that dinner.
Well, she gets in a big argument with her husband, who's like, you embarrassed me at this party. Stop talking about
okay.
it. Like, just focus on your graffiti stuff and blah. So then she goes back alone, and it's nearly bonfire night, which is why there's a big bonfire there makes a lot more sense. Because in the film, I'm always like, why there that big bonfire there, though?
Yeah, they're like, yeah, we're just going to burn a load of shit, I guess.
Right? Yeah, 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 yeah.
We don't want to take the rubbish out. So we just burn it intermittently.
Yeah, so now it's, you know, the 5th of November is coming up, where listeners who may not be aware, in the UK, traditionally, you have a big bonfire and throw fireworks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So she goes to visit Anne-Marie, and it's like, you told me that an old man got murdered, and that doesn't seem to be the case. And Anne-Marie's acting really weird, and she's like, she won't let her in, and she's like looking all grey and worried, but is like freaked out about something. Anne-Marie's like, oh, fine, fuck this. She goes to snoop around where she'd sort of seen some of this like weird graffiti earlier, and there's like a dog trapped in the like locked in an abandoned flat that won't get let out, and then someone warns her, people are watching, you've got to get out of here. So she gets out and then finds out that Anne-Marie's son is dead and has been murdered. And there's a really weird passage where Helen starts to formulate the idea that all of these urban myths of like horrible stuff happening, that the stories exist to stop the things from actually happening. And that basically people tell the stories to like get the bad impulses out of their heads.
Okay.
And that she starts to realize that by her going around and asking all these questions, people have stopped telling the stories because they're like, no, like they're getting like shy or embarrassed. Mm. So now bad things are like happening because they can't get the ideas out of their heads.
Okay.
Then Anne-Marie gets arrested for her son's death, and Helen realizes that the son was probably dead in the flat when she was talking to Anne-Marie at the door.
Yeah.
So Helen goes back and she's like snooping around and she's like, what the fuck's going on? She goes to rescue that dog that was trapped, and instead the dog's gone, but there's just a massive pile of sweets and razor blades.
Right.
Then the Candyman arrives.
Okay.
And he pops up. So here's the description of how he turns up. She stood up again and backed away from the mattress. As she did so, a buzzing sound reached her ears from the next room. She turned, and the light in the bedroom diminished as a figure stepped into the gullet between her and the outside world. Silhouetted against the light, she could scarcely see the man in the doorway, but she smelt him. He smelt like candy floss, and the buzzing was with him or in him. "I came for you," he murmured, so softly that seduction might have been in the air. And so saying, he moved through the passageway and into the light. She knew him without doubt. She had known him all along in that place kept for terrors. It was the man graffitied on the wall. His portrait painter had not been a fantasist. The picture that howled over her was matched in each extraordinary particular by the man she now set eyes upon. He was bright to the point of gaudiness, his flesh a waxy yellow, his thin lips pale blue, wild eyes glittering, as if their irises were set with rubies. His jacket was a patchwork, his trousers the same. He looked, she thought, almost ridiculous, with his blood-stained motley and the hint of rouge on his jaundiced cheeks. So he's much more of like a Harlequin character. That, right, by the way, is the entirety of the description we get. There's no other description.
Okay, right.
He introduces himself to her as the Candyman. That's the name he gives himself.
Okay.
And he basically says, I came for you. You're the one I want. Gives a kiss. He gives her a kiss. And then she wakes up and he's gone. And she figures out that the locals have been like giving him sweets and razor blades to keep him away. And now somehow she's like interrupted that process.
Right.
And what the locals are doing is they've taken the boy, Anne-Marie's son's dead body, which was bundled up in amongst all of the sweets, and they're going to burn it on the bonfire as evidence. So Helen is like, no, you can't do that. I won't let you burn the body. She crawls into the bonfire, and then the Candyman's in there, and he gives her a big hug, and they burn up together, and that's the end of the story.
Okay, cool. That's feels very, you know, like very similar but different. Kind of like this Harlequin dandy character is quite interesting.
Yeah.
The community is such a, obviously sounds like it's a really big part of it, which is, you know, what we're saying about like why the first one works. And it's, I think that it's that nice idea that the Candyman is a secret that everybody knows and nobody talks about.
Yeah, for me, the strongest bit is that thing that she keeps trying to find the source of these stories, and everyone mm-hmm. is always like, no, nothing.
There's
like,
something worse happened in the next building over. That's cool. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's a good story. It's what is interesting to me is what stayed the same and what Bernard Rose added. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of extra stuff about Helen and that whole... Her weird dark journey where she gets pulled into, you know, becoming a monster herself.
I really
like. That's very strong.
Yes, and her kind of, yeah, descending into madness and being accused of being a killer, all that is mm-hmm. good. But it seems like, yeah, like a lot of that original story is made it into the film. I wonder if, like, they changed the location to America, because, like, obviously, like, the... The first Hellraiser is set in London, right? And then Hellraiser 2 picks up immediately after the events of Hellraiser 1, and suddenly they're in America.
Yeah, because have been all along.
Yeah, because people were kind of like, yeah, we don't want to film in England. We're not doing it.
We're not doing it. Exactly. I think that the transplanting from Liverpool or London or wherever to Chicago it kind of just adds a lot of, like, heart to the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Barker one, The Forbidden, it's kind of about these, like, these unexamined spaces, I guess, and the things that are festering in the places where you don't look. And I guess the film Candyman is a bit like that as well. It's about the places that Helen doesn't look.
Yes.
But Chicago is obviously a much bigger...
Yeah.
You know, place.
Yeah, indeed. And interesting, you know, looking at the books of blood, because apparently Candyman 2 was originally, the original director had this intention, like, Candyman did well enough to be like, right, we'll do a Candyman 2. What should we do it about? And his idea was to go back, apparently, to the books of blood and find another story to adapt and turn that into a Candyman 2. And then that didn't work out because I think he ended up taking another gig and stuff like that. But apparently Candyman 2 was going to be based off of the Midnight Meat Train.
I have read the Midnight Meat Train. It is a good, weird story. And again, like, the connective tissue there is that is also very urban legend based.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there is a film adaptation of the Midnight Meat Train that the curious viewers can watch. It's got a little lad called Vinny Jones.
Oh, it's the Juggernaut, bitch.
And I believe Bradley Cooper as well. But that's a very similar story about a guy who's trying to photograph people that fall asleep on the subway. I think it's the New York subway. And gets a little more than he bargained
for. Like another person doing an art project or a thesis or something.
He's the Helen Lyle type.
And, like, but in that story, the original Barker story, the Candyman is not the villain. But I think that there were some ideas to change. The villain would have been the Candyman. And apparently what I was reading, that this would have maybe have actually been set in London. So they would have relocated the Candyman to doing this kind of weird stuff on underground trains, and the idea that he's kind of like murdering people as some sort of blood tribute to some sort of like higher master or something. And apparently there was, like, I don't think this is in the story, but like in the treatment for the film, there was going to be a thing where the Queen was a cannibal. Yes.
Whoa. Well, now you know why the film never happened. That's they got like, too close to the truth.
That's some like David Icke fucking lizard people hollow moon shit, right?
Yeah, boy.
So a very interesting look at what the Candyman could have been and would have taken the franchise off in a very different direction, because it feels like that would have ended up creating some other lore behind Candyman, completely relocating, wouldn't have been about the family, would have explored other urban legends, which, you know, I'm not saying that would be good, but like,
could have been.
But would have been an interesting way to go, and maybe wasn't done also because it sounds a bit more bold, because, you know, with sequels, you kind of just want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So offering up something that's too wildly different might have just upset the apple cart too much. But
yeah,
what an alternative world to live in.
I love the idea of like a cinematic universe just based on the stories from the Books of Blood. Some of those are fucking mental. There's a story called The Body Politic about a man whose own internal organs plot a revolt against him.
Amazing.
And one of his hands chops off the other hand, and then that hand starts like taking out all of his body parts, and they like crawl around and organize a revolution where everybody like breaks down into their constituent parts. It's fucking mental.
Clive Barker's a weird dude.
Yeah, weird right? dude, man. Weird
but, you
dude.
Know, hats off to you, Mr. Barker. But then obviously the franchise, you know, original recipe franchise ended after the third film.
Yeah.
And I think there were a few, I did find there was like a few kind of like little tidbits about what could have been from a potential Candyman 4.
Go on.
Which never got made. So I think one of the things that was going on would have been the idea of the Candyman once again haunting a relative.
Okay.
But this time in like a secluded girls' school, you know, like a boarding school. So, you know, nothing just in that kind of like town, like that's nothing super exciting. It sounds a bit more slashery, you know,
yeah.
Like the idea of like, because the Candyman things always like take place over like a city, right? Mm, like there's lots of locations. This feels a bit more like, you know, your Crystal Lake, right? You know, like you're in a secluded area and there's a spooky man. But I think apparently like Tony Todd was maybe more on board for this than he was for the other idea that was floating around, which was Candyman versus the Leprechaun.
Golly gee.
I know, right? Well, I think that this was around the time that Freddy versus Jason finally happened, and the studio that was going to, you know, the studio was like, we have a Candyman and a Leprechaun. Like, because I think one of the reasons that Freddy versus Jason took so long is that, like, it was different studios originally, and they couldn't come to an agreement, and eventually everything ended up at the same studio so they could make it. Whereas with this, but, like, I mean, I haven't seen the Leprechaun films, but I know that like they're goofier. They're like a horror comp. So I just don't see how that could work, because it seems like the antithesis of, you know, the Candyman is not a, he's never been a goofy slasher. You couldn't, and you could potentially pair him off with like a Jason Voorhees who has been goofy, but you can treat Jason in a way that isn't silly.
Yeah.
You could make it work for those two characters.
If I was gonna,
Leprechaun is a leprechaun.
If I was going to pair a leprechaun against anyone, it's Chucky from Child's Play, obviously.
Right?
Battle of the Little Guys. Ooh. If I was going to pair Candyman against anyone, if I have anyone to choose from, I'm choosing a T-Rex.
Right, yeah.
But if it's got to be like slasher villains, I mean, we've mentioned him already, but Pinhead?
I mean, they feel like, you know, because it's Barker, it feels like they exist in the same world of these weird, seductive evils that kind of cross.
Well, what I like,
pleasure
yeah,
and pain.
You're
so
absolutely
it
right.
feels like they could coexist in a world, and there would be some reason for them to clash.
And the main trait that I would say they share, Pinhead and Candyman, is that they...
Beast! No, it's not Beast.
It's not Beast. They both just stand there in big coats.
Yeah,
they, like, suddenly appear and they're just like, Helen.
Yes.
Or whatever the character's name is in the Hellraiser films. And they just stand there and, like, you are doomed.
They pontificate.
Now. Yes, I'm going to give a speech with my digitally pitched
they
down voice.
They both have hooks.
They both have hooks. And so just, I'm imagining a film where they both appear and they're like, Candyman's like, I hate you, Pinhead. And Pinhead's like, yes, I hate you, Daniel Robitaille, the Candyman.
You didn't come to my birthday party in Leviathan.
Yeah. Are either of us going to do anything about it? You move first and then maybe I'll do something about it. No, you move first. Well, I suppose we'll just have to stand here and scowl at each other. Well, you're being very stubborn. No, you're being stubborn.
Imagine going to see fucking Pinhead versus Candyman at the cinema, and it's just the two of them. It's like that film where like the guy sat on the cliff playing chess with death.
Yeah.
It's just like the two of them just like chatting shit for most of the, it's the two of them doing a podcast.
What a night. I just hit subscribe so fast my neck snapped. Love that idea.
But yeah, so apparently Tony Todd shot down the idea of doing that, which, you know, fair play, Mr. Todd.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sad about it, but I get it.
I'm glad that he kind of like, you know, like hung on to the legacy of that character and kept it pure. So as we mentioned earlier, Candyman, while a popular franchise, people know the character, hasn't spun off into a lot of stuff. There's not the novels. There's not the comic books. There's not all the other paraphernalia and adjacent material that you would normally get with these kind of franchises. There's a few bits, though. One of the things that is, I think, curious, that, you know, you don't have a comic. You don't have an action figure. You've got a board game based on the second film.
That's correct, Thomas Denny. You have hit the nail right on the head, because this is a board game based on Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh.
Farewell to the big fish, the King Fish Man.
Oh, do not bring up the King Fish. Luckily, he's not in the game. This is a weird-looking board game.
I guarantee
though.
He should be in this thing.
Here's what it says on the back of the box, right? As you travel the streets of New Orleans looking for pieces of the puzzle to solve the Candyman murder mysteries, you have to make sure you do not become a victim yourself. It's not really a murder mystery, though, is it? To win, player must proceed clockwise along the streets of New Orleans. Yes, that's a typo in the description on the back of the box.
Is there one player game?
I don't know. You have to proceed along clockwise along the streets of New Orleans, get to the mansion with the key card in order to unlock the secret to Candyman's power. You know, just like in the film where you have to get the key card and go to the mansion.
I guess the key card is actually, rather than a key card, as in a kind of like a swipe key card, it's a card with a picture of a key on.
Maybe.
In the box. I haven't played this game. I don't know really anything about it. I just wish that there were like lots of spaces on the board where it's like, you've landed on the kingfish thing and you have to turn this card and you have to read what's on the card and it just goes on for fucking ever.
It's just a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, like but you turn it over and then the card unfolds.
Oh, fuck, you know, why'd you land on the kingfish?
And it's like, oh, I guarantee you, I'm mostly made out of shrimp. And
well, I mean, It doesn't bode well when the rest of the description, the last paragraph, is inspired by the imagination of the Gramercy Pictures marketing team.
Wow. So it just sounds like a very generic board game?
Yeah, I think it's for promotional use only, as in I don't think it was ever actually for sale.
Which makes sense.
Do you know why it makes sense? Because the rules are shit. Right. I found the rule book online. I read the whole rule book. It did not take long, Tom, because this game is Snakes and Ladders.
Oh, no.
It's Snakes and Ladders with some additional...
It's Hooks and Bees.
It's additional rules to make Snakes and Ladders even worse.
Oh, no.
Roll a 5, you just miss your turn. That's fun, missing your turn. That's why a 5? I guess because you say his name 5 times?
I guess.
If you land on a bee sting, you have to go right back to the start, all the way back to the start. That's fun in a game, having to start the whole thing again. As you go around, you land on different spaces and you have to draw a card. If you end up drawing 5 Candyman cards, you're out of the game forever and you just have to sit there and watch your friends continue to play.
Oh, no. Yeah, like, Snakes and Ladders is not a grown-up game. Do not make it like...
I know.
That's such an odd mix for like doing something with the Candyman. But I guess, you know, if it was for like promotional use only, someone was like...
Well, no one's going to play it.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's got like, you've got an afternoon to make the Candyman. I have seen some images of it and like the board looks cool. Like the artwork is quite fun. Shame that the game is shit.
Yeah. Now, I haven't played it. Maybe there's some sort of added frisson. If you were to actually play it, that could be fun. If you get hook cards, Tom, if you get enough hook cards, then that
you
means
can murder one of your friends.
You can give Candyman cards to your friends, but
okay.
You can also use them to steal the essential key card.
Okay. To get the mirror, I guess. Or, I don't know.
Go to the mansion.
I bet that goes for loads of money online as well, because it sounds like there's probably only like 5 copies of it.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I'd bid on that.
I'd just be like, that's just fucking Snakes and Ladders.
I mean, yeah. I've, fine. I don't have to actually play it.
Yeah. I mean, weird that that is like basically the only kind of little extra thing that we could find. I mean, or, well, games. It was like there's another game that doesn't exist, right?
Yeah, so from at time of record right now, we are in February 2022. And in just the very recent times of October 2021, we found a YouTube video of a guy who was like, "Hey, I've made a Candyman video game and it's coming out on Halloween next week. Here's a little 50-second teaser of the gameplay." That was months ago. The game has not showed up, and the link that he included no longer works, sadly. So I don't know if he ever ended up finishing it, but we watched his little gameplay trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gameplay, it's a bit hard to tell from this. There's a man standing in a mirror who says Candyman five times, and then the lights go out.
Yeah, the lights go out, and then you think, and then the lights go back up, and you think, well, I'm going to see something different in the mirror. And you don't.
There's a little shadow of a hook on the wall. You have to be very eagle-eyed.
Oh my god, that is too hard to spot. Because yeah. I watched it before we watched it again today, and I was like, oh, that looks like the shadow of the Candyman there. And then on this, I was like, oh no, that's just the guy.
Yeah,
it's just him. Well, okay, there's a hook.
Interesting to me that it's like, right, I'm going to make a game about the Candyman films that I love. Time to build my main character. Right, let me just get the man template out.
Yep.
That's not really what the films are about. I mean, the new one has starts with a male protagonist who then fades into the background and is replaced by a female protagonist. All of the others are about women.
Yeah, and this one's like kind of like, it's a white dude.
It's a white dude, yeah.
Hooray, we fixed the Candyman, Frant. Oh, fucking hell,
I'm sure that wasn't deliberate, but it did just stick out to me a little bit. I was like, well...
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I just don't understand, like, fair play, give it a go. How do you gamify, like, the Candyman? Because he's... you take liberties with like making a video game of like a movie monster or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's a character that you literally have to summon. So kind of, I mean, that's easy to play. You just don't
do that.
Do it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you start the game having already summoned him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would be interested.
That would be like saying, oh, yeah, but the Alien games, they're easy. Just don't go to space.
True, true. But like, I think my point is I would be interested to know what his plan was for making a functional, fun game out of the Candyman that wasn't just like recreating scenes from the film with no kind of real gameplay twist to
it. Yeah, yeah. And to be clear, I want it to come out and I want it to be good. So at the time that you listen to this in the future, if the game is out, let us know. And if you are the dude that made the game,
good on you, I guess.
Drop me a line. Like, I want to hear from you. Even if the game doesn't end up coming out, I would love to hear from you. So yeah, I've got high hopes.
Yeah. But that's kind of it, right?
That's kind of it
in terms of additional media. We did find something that's bit of a treat for us here at the Bitter End podcast when we find a fan film.
Mwah, love the existence of a fan film. Yes, anything that is without studio permission.
That may have been why the game didn't come out. I can totally imagine they just got fucking cease and desisted.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a very good point. I don't quite understand how this fan film hasn't been cease and desisted because it's got actual like Philip Glass music in it.
But Phil's not paying attention.
No, he's got other things to do. Like press three keys on a press three fingers on a keyboard and go,
someone's got to do it. So we watch this fan film.
It is called The Bride of Candyman, directed by Chris R. Notarile.
One of those, because maybe almost right.
Somebody who goes on YouTube by the name of Blinky500.
Okay. And in also a very interesting way of doing the R, right? Like,
so his middle initial R, he's got a full stop in front of it and after it. That's not how you do initials, is it?
He's a renegade, man. This is the renegade cut. so we watched, we gave this a watch, and it's about a young woman who is trying to write a book.
Yeah.
Like a horror book, and she's talking to her roommate. She can't think of what to write. And it's quite funny that the opening is this woman looking at a computer screen, and she writes, "I suck."
Yeah. I find it quite interesting that, like, the reason that she explains to her roommate that she wants to write a book is because she keeps seeing that ghost stories are trending.
Yeah,
and then she's like, right, I'm gonna write one, open up the laptop, and then sit down and like wait for an idea to come.
Yeah,
like I feel like most writers, the idea comes and then you go, I should probably write that down. You don't be like, right, I'm gonna write something.
Yeah.
Oh no, I've got nothing.
The fear of the blank page.
Yeah.
And then the friend is like, well, why don't I just look up some urban legends or something, you know, to kind of spark your interest. And I think she's suggesting some things are kind of done. And there's this bit where she's kind of like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not going to write some shit that somebody's already done. That's fucking played out, man. That's ridiculous. That's not mine. And it's kind of like, this isn't a fan film. Is this incredibly self-aware or not self-aware at all? I can't tell. It was amazing.
I think it's self-aware.
Okay, because
the guy does a lot of fan films. He's also done a film of Beetlejuice. I saw that. He's done a film of Space Ghost, I think.
Yeah. And the whole opening scene is quite weirdly shot, because it's like these, it's just two locked headshots of the two people talking. So the one of them sat at her desk with her "I suck" laptop, and her friend is standing like in the hallway talking to her, and they're looking at each other. And it's weird because like there's like a load of background noise whenever you cut to one of them and not when you cut to the other one. So like there's no kind of like sound balance.
Yeah.
And we're just watching this. It's like this feels really disjointed. It's kind of, cause, and I was like, they're just like not there talking to each other. They can't be. This just seems really like they've been filmed in two different locations, people having conversations with no one that's there. And then suddenly the person moves, and like the whole layout of the flat doesn't make sense in my head. And I had to get out a piece of paper. This doesn't really work on a podcast, but like as soon as the camera pans around to reveal the flat, it doesn't make any sense of where this one character's eye line was going to where the character is. I was like, I'm drawing a floor plan. I have to try and figure out how this flat works.
And I don't
know how it works. And then they all turn to the camera and look into the camera, which is now fisheye. And it's like, oh, the camera is the mirror. And they're looking in, they've looked up about Candyman. Like, let's do it. Let's say Candyman five times. And I'm like, but then the mirror was just following them around the room. It's now floating in midair. What is this flat?
Listeners, I wish you could see this floor plan that Tom drew. It's like
the scribblings of a madman.
It's like somebody trying to solve the JFK assassination. But he was so adamant that he had to do it. And he's correct. You can see where from the arrows of the eye line, where the main character should have been sitting, and then where they were actually sitting.
It was behind a wall.
Yeah. The magic, I propose the magic wall theory.
Yes, fair. I mean, this is maybe more thought that anyone has ever put into this particular fan film. Anyway, the Candyman is summoned, and he pops up in the middle of the night and hooks the best friend to death.
Yep.
And then he goes and finds the girl who's trying to write the story, and he looks at her and is like, "Gugoy,
yeah,
I love you.
Awooga."
He's just something like, "I'm going to marry you because of reasons."
He just likes her.
He really likes her, and he's like, "I love murdering people. I just hooked your friend to death in the crotch. But you, let's be married." And so then the rest of the film is him pursuing her and just popping up being like, "You're going to marry me. You're going to marry me." He's just very persistent. It's not cool. She said no. The Candyman makeup is like they've actually, fair play to them, they could have just buttoned the coat up, but like they've made like this kind of like chest plate with the exposed ribs and stuff.
Yeah. And I also do want to stress, like, Matey Boy playing Candyman is pretty good. Dude's got some gravitas.
He's doing all right. He's doing a good job.
He's doing, it's a limited budget situation, yeah, and he's doing all right.
The girl he's pursuing just shoots him a bunch in a car park.
This is quite good. She just like gets a gun out and it's just like ba-bam, 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 which I don't recall anyone ever trying on the Candyman.
Yeah, it didn't work though.
Well, for a minute I was like, what if this works?
And basically in the end, I mean, you know, the messaging in this isn't great. He just grinds her down. Or this is a bit where he kind of takes her back in time, I think, to maybe see his sister, the scene of her babysitting her younger sister.
And he's like, if you don't marry me, I'm going to kill her.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, then I'll marry you.
And then he hooks her to death.
Does he hook her to death?
Yeah, he's kind of like, she's like, I'll agree to marry you, but I'll never love you. And then they do the be my victim bit, and he does hook her, but I guess that's him killing her so she can live on with him.
I see.
You know, and I don't want to like rag too hard on a fan film because, you know, something that people just decided to make out of love for the franchise, and that's cool. I just find them kind of weird. I love fan films because I just cannot understand it. Like, I guess it's like writing fanfic, but like, you know, going to so much more effort.
Yeah. And it's, I completely agree. Like, I hope the dude has his own script that he's working on and he can, you know, he's kind of just working out his chops so he can make that next. But, you know, it's
a thing that exists on the internet.
It's a thing that exists on the internet.
And you can see it too if you like. So, you know, and that's all I have to say about that.
All I have to say about that.
Now.
Yes, Thomas.
On the subject of, like, you know, hacks coming up with, you know, their own variations on it.
I suppose you can do better, can you?
No. but I think it's time. It's a lovely segue into what we like to do on every wrap-up, where me and Todd pitch out our idea for where we would like to see the franchise go.
Okay. Well, would you like to do the honours, Tom?
I'll have a go, and I don't think this is fully cooked. Maybe you can help brainstorm this with me, and we'll get something good.
All right.
And, you know, normally with these, I like try and have a little bit of fun with it, and like I feel like this isn't like quite as... like the Candyman isn't just like... a consistently like a funny franchise. Like a lot of the stuff we watch gets goofy as shit, and this doesn't. So
no,
I just
this is it. Like actually gets less goofy, right?
It gets less goofy, but the idea I kind of have, like the thing that's not really kind of like the thread that hasn't been pulled on, is that there is the song "The Candyman." So my film is called "The Candyman Can."
Okay.
And I would just like to see a film that explores the idea of, like, the urban legend and the mythos of, like, the Candyman living in a world alongside... Maybe you would set it in the 70s when the song, The Candyman, that featured in the film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, written by Leslie Bracus and Anthony Newley, sung in the film by Aubrey Woods and then also made very famous by Sammy Davis Jr. So that it became his only number one hit single, and he became known as the Candyman.
Right.
Apparently he didn't really like the song. He thought it was a bit too sweet and saccharine, wasn't really his bag, but it kind of blew up for him.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew? Thank you. Cover it with chocolate or a miracle too. The Candyman. The Candyman can.
Like a Candyman film set around that. Like, you know, like the idea of this song comes out that becomes a big hit, and that in some way, like going and singing this song is somehow invoking the Candyman.
Well, I mean, you only have to say his name five times. How many times do they say Candyman in that song?
A fucking bunch, mate. There's got to be some mirrors somewhere.
Yeah. Sammy Davis Jr. backstage, like...
Yeah, exactly.
It's Vegas, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's mirrored.
But, like, the idea of, like, kind of the idea that this hit song is kind of, like, floating around there, like, Sammy Davis Jr. is there performing it, the film is playing, people are buying it on record and stuff like that. And that these Candyman murders are happening you know, they're following Sammy Davis Jr. around on tour. They're happening in these cinemas. They're like, they're happening where people are playing their records at home. And it's just kind of like the idea that like the Candyman urban legend and the murders become like a viral hit.
Yes.
And so there's, and the idea that like Sammy Davis Jr., people think like Sammy Davis Jr., you're behind this. Like, you know, everywhere you go, like there's these murders following you around on tour, but we can't pin it on you because there's all these similar murders going on, like, somewhere else in the world where, like, after a screening of fucking Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory or something like that, and like Sammy Davis is like, I don't like this song, this isn't, I don't even like it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, Sammy, you gotta go and play the song on stage. I don't want to go and play the song on stage because people are gonna die if I keep on playing the song.
I like this idea a lot. Genuinely feel like it'd be a good film, or even, dare I say, Tom, a one-man show.
Oh, yeah. Yes, can you imagine? I just like the idea of like, yeah, like it's an urban myth, and like what would happen if, you know, like how does that myth spread? And the idea that, like, you know, like the, can the Candyman be in multiple places at once?
Well, we know from Candyman 2021 that there are Candymen,
which I really liked. And, you know, we haven't really talked about this, but like, you know, if there was a sequel to that, I would like to see another Candyman film.
I'd love
that. And I thought that was interesting enough a take. I would like to see it. I don't need, like we said in the last one, I don't need to see Tony Todd be the Candyman. I'm much more interested in the idea of multiple Candymen and exploring, you know, and even like, you know, a Candy Helen, like that idea of other people getting sucked into this weird world.
Yes. And one of the unanswered questions I have from the new one is what, you know, there's this idea that every generation has a Candyman, but do the older ones ever really go away? You know, so now that after the events of the new film, Anthony has become the new Candyman, do the older Candymen still exist? Or has he replaced them?
Yeah, yeah. Or is it just a generational thing? It's like whoever. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, kind of a bit of a riff on that, but that is my less funny than usual idea for a sequel.
I love it, Tom. And you know what? They can't all be that time that you did Universal Soldier as A Christmas Carol, where Jean-Claude Van Damme had an internet addiction and had to go to a strip club to go on the internet. And Dolph Lundgren appeared to him as the ghost of Christmas present.
Oh, man. Internet strip club. Forgot about that. It was great. Do you have a sequel idea you would like to pitch?
Well, Tom, I'm glad you asked, because yes, I do.
Well, good, because that makes the segment work.
That's kind of the pre-agreed format.
Yeah.
12 seasons in. Yeah. Do you know what? I hadn't entirely fleshed this out before I came over here tonight, but I managed to get it finished on the walk over. Thank God. So I've taken a very similar approach. I've gone quite serious with mine, only I've honed in on the thing that was missing from yours, the thing you deliberately left out.
Bees?
Not quite. Okay. No, mine is called, it's also about music. It is a musical, in fact, and it is called Sweeney Tony Todd.
Okay.
You could probably already guess the entire rest of this from that title. Quite pleased with myself when I came up with the title.
It's good.
Left the rest until the last minute. But Sweeney Tony Todd is a gothic musical with very repetitive songs by Philip Glass. No need for this show to win a Tony. We've brought our own. That's the catchphrase for the posters. So Tony Todd plays himself, and he attempts to open up a barbershop, but he does a bad job because he's still got the hook for a hand. So soon there's more blood on the floor than there is hair, and he's got no customers left. With the landlord hounding him for rent, he has to make some money some way or another. His wife, who is a bee, suggests...
Thank you.
Literally, I know that was in your contract for appearing here tonight, Tom, that I include a bee. So I did. His wife, who is a bee, suggests a daring heist wherein they take one of the mirrors from the barbershop, rent a space within the local bank vault. We're just going to put our mirror here in this bank. And with her as a tiny bee, hitches a ride on like the shoulder of the guy that puts it in the bank vault. He doesn't even notice her. Once inside the vault, Bee Wife looks into the mirror, says her husband's name 5 times. Tony Todd, Tony Todd, Tony Todd, Tony Todd, Tony Todd. Allowing him to materialise in the bank vault and fill his pockets with cash. But how does he get out? Well, don't worry, Tom. Don't worry. Phew. Please, for God's sake, calm down, because it's fine. B-wife flies out through the aircon, back to their barbershop, says his name again in the other mirrors of the barbershop, and bingo, he's back home with all the money. So all of a sudden they can pay the rent and everything's fine. They sing some very repetitive songs by Philip Glass. Probably they'll go, huh, 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 huh. But don't worry, in the third act, there's more drama. A detective comes snooping and asking too many difficult questions. So Tony Todd offers a free haircut for the shaggy-haired detective. And soon the cop finds himself the main ingredient in Todd Brand special baklava. Ooh. Baklava because it's flavoured with the honey from Bee Wife's own hive.
Amazing.
To cover up the smell of the flavour of the meat. The stresses pile up, putting a strain on the marriage. But ultimately, it's a story of redemption as the baklava becomes a popular snack all throughout London. I think it's set in London. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the two re-solidify their love through a joint business venture. No more theft needed. The barbershop becomes a Greek bakery instead.
Amazing.
The end. Sweeney Tony Todd.
I like that a lot. Bee baklava. It's got everything.
It's got everything. A hook.
Yeah.
A heist.
Exactly.
I don't know where the heist came from. I have seen Sweeney Todd. I don't remember a heist in it, but as I was writing that, I was just like, bosh a heist in.
It reminds me a little bit of, and I don't want to invoke the name of Woody Allen, but like there's
that. Do not say that 4 more times, please.
No, oh God, no, I won't. But there's a film about
Small-time crooks,
where the bunch of small-time crooks want to break into a bank, so they buy the building next. They rent the building next to it and turn it into a cookie. They need so they can tunnel into the vault, but they need a cover story. So they the wife runs a cookie shop, and that ends up making them loads of money. So then they end up being like, we're in the cookie game now, I guess, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of like that, kind of like, hey, we're baklava, we just need to fill it with policemen, I guess. Like it. I like it.
Thanks, man.
I'd rather watch that than the Woody Allen film.
Me too. and I just want more Tony Todd, you know? Like, dude's classically trained. I don't know I've ever heard him sing, but I bet he can.
No. I watched something that he showed up in recently. He was the voice of Scareglow in the new Netflix He-Man series. The one that upset lots of, like, fucking whiny man babies because, like, there were too many women in it and not enough He-Man. But it had Tony Todd as a glow-in-the-dark skeleton who lives in hell.
Sounds totally dope. There's absolutely no way in hell I'm watching all of a He-Man cartoon, but I will watch a supercut of the Tony Todd bit. Okay.
It's about 5 minutes.
Okay.
I'll find a link for you.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, I guess that brings us to the end of Candyman Mania, as we've been calling it all season long.
Candy Mania. You could have shortened that too further if you wanted.
Yeah, and, you know, to summarise, yes, good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, yes, all right.
I liked it. It's got good bookends. Middle bits you don't need to bother with. It's like a reverse sandwich.
Right, yeah, it's good. So, you know, the question now is at episode 101. What's next? Well, folks, there is some unfinished business that sort of raised its ugly head around Christmas time.
God damn it, they're pulling us back in for one more job.
They are, because, Todd Jordan, there is now in the world a new Home Alone film that we have not watched. And we're coming back next time to watch Home Sweet Home Alone. Apparently, according to the internet, it's really, really, really good.
Wink! it's going to be...
It's going to be a film that we turn into a podcast, but we got to do it, right?
We have to do it.
We have to watch that shit.
Just when we think we're out of the Home Alone franchise, Disney, they pull us back in.
Disney acquire the IP to something they can put on Disney Plus, and you know, God bless us, everyone. Also, you know, it was released at Christmas. It is now February. who knows when it'll be when we actually watch it, but I love that we do not watch any of these Home Alone films at the vague Christmas timey time that they're supposedly meant to be watched.
No way, man. That's for squares.
Yeah, fuck that shit, man.
That's for squares and fullers.
If they can make Home Alone 4 in a desert in South Africa with nothing more than some CGI snow and a grey filter, then we can watch a Home Alone film in February.
I'll knock us an egg.
Exactly.
Maybe it'll be have a bee egg in it.
Oh, God. Or an egg bee, I suppose. Can you imagine? Mmm, tangy. Mmm, it makes my mouth go numb. Ooh, love it. So that's it from us at the Bitter End Podcast for this season. Season 12?
Season 12, I
think. Season 12. Absolutely. Over 100 episodes.
Thank you so much for everybody that got in touch to share their thoughts on our centennial. Much, much appreciated. So sweet to hear from you all, and it really makes it all worth while. So thank you very much. We hope that you will stick around. We don't know when we're going to get around to this Home Alone movie, but it's coming. I promise
it's in the
coming pipe.
So yeah, I'm Tom Denny.
I'm Todd Jordan.
And just going to end on this note that I'm glad that we've said Candyman so many times and we have not invoked the Candyman. Could you imagine if the Candyman was real? Like, you know, we're there being like, Candyman this and Candyman that. And like, just imagine some fucking bees showed up and like how just like kind of, hang on.
I think they're just attracted to my mirrored shades I've been wearing.
Okay, yeah, it's probably that. I just wouldn't have thought that you would get so many bees in the middle of winter. Todd, I think I might have made a terrible, terrible mistake here. We might have said too many Candymans.
Oh no.
God. He's here.
Allow me to introduce myself. Gus Polinski. How are you? Polka King of the Midwest. The Kenosha Kickers.
The Yellow King is back.
Have you two met before?
Yeah, man, it was like the end of the Home Alone season. Remember, there was that whole bit. You were in a coma.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember and that. I was in a coma.
Oh, this is... Oh, Todd, this is the Yellow King.
Hello, mate.